maman est devenue une vieille peau. Elle se prend pour un bonobo. Dès qu'elle voit un mec qu'elle trouve beau, elle lui tombe raide sur le paletot.
Award-winning primatologist and acclaimed author Franz De Waal has established a reputation in the scientific community and beyond for his research and observations on primate behavior, particularly that of the bonobo, a chimp-like species known for resolving disputes with affection and sex rather than rivalry and discord. But what truly sets De Waal apart from many other naturalist writers is his ability to detect the seeds of human nature in the behavior and actions of our primate relatives. In his new book, The Bonobo and the Atheist, In Search of Humanism Among the Primates, De Waal looks to argue an account of how evidence of ethical behavior in our primate cousins strongly suggests that fairness and empathy are not exclusive to our species, but were conferred on us by evolution. It is a great pleasure to welcome Franz De Waal to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Hello, I'm glad to be there.
It is wonderful to have you here. What brought you to this chapter of your research?
Well, I've written before about the origins of morality in animal behavior, but at the moment I'm exploring, first of all, some new findings. We have findings about the sense of fairness and justice and so on, and also to connect with religion, because many people believe that morality comes from God and that religion is awfully important in it. I'm not denying that religion has a role to play, but morality is probably much older than the 2,000 or 3,000 years that our current religions exist.
You address this in the book, but so often we think of in the natural world as it being this battlefield where the toughest survive.
Yeah, that's of course a very general picture, and people relate that to the struggle for life. Well, the struggle for life is usually won not by defeating someone or beating someone up, but by having a better immune system or being better able to find food or escape predators. And so the struggle for life is a bit of a misnomer of what's going on in the natural world. And there's a lot of animals who survive by cooperation. So they depend on each other, they need each other, they hang together, they also compete with each other. No one is denying that, but there's a high level of cooperation going on.
When you look, I mean, as the title suggests, the bonobo and the atheist. So what is it about the bonobo that is so fascinating when it comes to this search of humanism?
Well, the bonobo is a special species because it's equally close to us as the chimpanzee, and people often forget because the chimpanzee has the reputation for aggression and dominance, and I think it's a deserved reputation, even though chimpanzees also cooperate quite a bit. But the bonobo has basically none of that, because the bonobos have been studied in the field and in captivity extensively, and there are no cases known of lethal aggression among bonobos. They are much gentler and friendlier. They have sex instead of fighting. The females dominate the males. When groups meet each other, instead of trying to kill each other, as chimpanzee males will do, and sometimes human males, of course, do, bonobos very quickly, they have sex with the neighbors, and then before you know it, the contact with the neighbors looks more like a picnic than like a warfare. And so it's a very different species in many regards.
And you look at chimpanzees in the book, and there is consoling. If there are distressed members of their group, they will console them. There is hugging, there is kissing. They are trying to make them feel better.
Yeah, that's a very interesting behavior that for a long time, I actually neglected that. I knew that chimpanzees did that, and the field workers knew the same thing about chimpanzees. But one day, I went to a meeting where child psychologists told me how they studied empathy in children, and they would say, we ask a family member to cry, and then we see how the children react, and the children, they touch them and embrace them, and that's what we call an expression of empathy. I said, well, if that's empathy, I have plenty of empathy in my chimpanzees, and so that's how I got into the study of empathy, which is now actually an up-and-coming field because there's now even studies on rodents and empathy.
So the step that you make that is so fascinating in the book with your research and your stories is that of bringing it one step further as to where religion or the lack thereof comes into this equation and how we take it that one step further.
Yeah, so in the book I discuss religion. I'm very tolerant of religion, although I must say that biblical literalists, I don't know what to do with, because of course as a scientist, I cannot take the Bible as the last word on how the world came about. But most religious people are not like that. Most of them are able to work with science and to think about science. And so I think religion plays a role in human morality, especially in large-scale societies. It provides some sort of structure to the human moral system that otherwise it would not be possible, because we live in such huge societies that it's impossible to have the sort of small-scale mechanisms that chimpanzees have. So I think religion plays a role, but I also need to make room in my book to discuss the origins of morality by pushing religion a little bit aside and pushing the neo-atheists who have been so vocal lately also a little bit aside, and to make room to argue that we need to look at our evolution as primates to understand where our moral systems come from. It doesn't come from God necessarily, and it doesn't come from rational thought necessarily, and so to see where it comes from.
So there is an inspiration to lead a good life. Believers and non-believers can find that, but it's where that comes from, I guess, is the question, right?
Yeah, I'm looking for the origins. I'm not looking for necessarily the specifics of a moral system, which are different from society to society and from religion to religion. So humans don't have a universal, identical moral system. And so I'm not looking for these very specific rules that we use, but more like, where do the general tendencies come from that we use to strive for justice, to strive for compassion? Where do these impulses come from?
And when you look at the bonobo specifically, what do you learn about that origin?
Yeah, the bonobo is a very gentle creature, so very sensitive to the emotions of others. They are not without conflict or aggression, as people sometimes think. They're not like sheep or something, but they do have conflicts, but they resolve them very quickly. And I think what we learn from the bonobo is that we have a very close relative who is, in terms of DNA, almost identical to us, like the chimpanzee and the bonobo. And we have a very close relative who is actually very gentle. And so instead of always focusing on the idea that we waged war forever and that we are like chimpanzees, very domineering and aggressive, we could also focus on the bonobo and see a much gentler side of our own species.
And with the chimpanzee, we see a different behavior, but we can still build on that primate behavior and how we evolved from it.
Yeah, because we have sort of characteristics of both. That's the interesting thing. I call humans sometimes the bipolar ape, because we have the friendly, sexy side of the bonobo, but we clearly also have sometimes the domineering and aggressive side of the chimpanzee. For example, chimpanzee males, they're very competitive when it comes to power positions. But at the same time, these males, they hunt together, they defend their territory together. So they're not incapable of cooperation. And actually, chimpanzee males are remarkably good at cooperation. So that's a bit like humans also. We humans have a nasty side, and we can be horrible to each other, both within the group and very often outside the group. But at the same time, we're a highly cooperative species that is capable of building entire cities together.
You have a chapter toward the end of the book called Bottom-Up Morality, and you look at the capuchin monkey and how they get along and this issue of sharing, which fits into this equation as well.
Yeah, the capuchin monkeys we used for an experiment on fairness, where we would have two capuchin monkeys sit side by side, and they would perform a simple task, and they would get the same rewards, and they are perfectly fine doing that. But then when you reward one of them much better, so one capuchin monkey gets cucumber pieces, the other one gets grapes, and grapes are far better for the capuchin, Then all of a sudden, the one who gets the cucumber doesn't want to work anymore. So he was willing to work for that food. When both of them got it, he's not willing to work for that food when the other one gets something so much better. And that's, of course, something we know in human society also. In fact, the whole protest against Wall Street and the bonuses of the bankers is related to that sort of inequity that we perceive. And so you can see that instead of the sense of justice and the sense of fairness being a product of a high capacity of reasoning, as some would think, it's actually something that's built into us and that you can see both in primates and you can also see it in young children if you look for it.
We are devoting a lot of time today to exploring primates and their behaviors, and we're thrilled to have you a part of this discussion. What do you think it is about us that makes the subject so interesting? And even to look at you as to really dedicating your life to this issue of primates and our similarities and differences, and what it is about the subject that resonates so clearly with us.
I think we're increasingly acknowledging that we are primates and that we're very similar to the other primates in many ways, even though some people will insist on the differences. I think many people are now open for this kind of comparisons that 20 years or 30 years ago people were not. People at that time, people were very much objecting to any sort of connection and saying that genes and biology are not so important in our lives as it is in the lives of animals. But I think that's all disappearing at the moment, and people are just very curious how our close relatives behave compared to themselves. They may still want to draw a line between themselves and the rest of the animal world, but the line is getting thinner. It's not as thick anymore as it used to be.
When you work on a project like this, and you have done several studies, and you write a book, and it answers many questions for you, I assume, but it also brings up many more questions, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. Is that when I wrote this book, my main goal was to say that morality is probably much older than our religions and that we shouldn't be looking for God and religion as the source of human morality. But in the context, I started to wonder, why do we actually have religions? So why do all societies, human societies in the world, have a belief in the supernatural and have religion? And so that's sort of the question that resonates through my book, is that, yes, I think religion is not the source of morality, but it must play some role in society and it must be constructive for some reason. And maybe we don't need to preserve it in its present form, but there is apparently a need in the human species for that kind of belief. So that I find that very intriguing as a question.
And do you think of the primates that you're studying and watching, and take the bonobo for example, that you're on a level playing field? Perhaps they are as curious about you as you are about them.
Oh yeah, they're very curious. Well, they don't have some sort of scientific hypothesis about the human species like we may have about them. But the primates that live in captivity, they're, of course, very curious about this. The primates that live in the field, they have a lot to fear from the human species. And so they are not always capable of expressing that curiosity because they have to run away, because there's quite a bit of hunting going on at the moment, which is very unfortunate. It used to be that the biggest threat was capture for zoos and that kind of things, but now the local people in Africa and in Asia, they are hunting and eating meat of wild animals, and bonobos and chimpanzees are part of that.
Well, the name of the book is The Bonobo and the Atheist, In Search of Humanism Among the Primates. It's published by Norton. Franz de Waal, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing your expertise. I appreciate it.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Great pleasure. Again, the name of the book, The Bonobo and the Atheist. It is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.